Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Sports City. It's your boy TP Timeless opening the door to the kitchen. Welcome to the Sunday morning brush. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside. The kitchen timeless is alive.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Timeless is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Ooh, Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to back rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you people.
Good morning. It's a Sports City chef with Sunday the brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy everybody, don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark, the Moses, and TP Timeless.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, and 2 hours of facts. That's a fact, yeah.
The caller number is 917-889-959. So you got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. And thank you to everybody that's been checking us out, downloading the shows, whether you're going on iTunes and seeing how you can get to this kitchen or coming right here to Blog Talk Radio, checking us out live or downloading when you see the link, whether on Twitter, Facebook, wherever you see us out there. We're giving y'all a lot of food for thought. Hopefully y'all can do these dishes. And like I said, the download numbers have been great. So thank you for everybody that's been supporting us on a day-by-day basis. Now, to get these guys in this kitchen as best seen fit, I got two people that you know well here in the kitchen. First and foremost, my big brother calling in from South Carolina. We have Mr. Knight, a.k.a. Nostradamus. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm good.
I got to get them going. I got to get them going. Hopefully, a couple of these dishes that I throw around the kitchen get them up. And secondly, calling in by way of the state of Georgia, we have Matt in the building. Matt, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling great. Wake up, Chandler.
We'll get him up. I got a couple of interesting topics to see where he stands at on this situation. But to start this one up, get to that cup of coffee. I know he needs a cup of Joe. I'm the type that don't drink coffee, though. But
make it a double cup of Joe.
Right. I don't do the cappuccino, none of that, espressos, whatever you need. But there's a lot of headline situations that I want to get to. First and foremost, Matt, I come to you on this one. The retirement in Lambeau, they hang up the number 4 of Brett Favre. Out there in Lambeau, got a very good reception in Wisconsin. A lot of people spoke on the matter, Mike Holmgren, Aaron Rodgers, just to say some of the notables out there in the, Packer land, if you will. Your thoughts on the career of Brett Favre, also on the retirement of them hanging up number 4 and everything that he went through, and also playing for a division foe for the Minnesota Vikings on wrapping up his career. But an excellent situation for him to retire his number in Lambeau yesterday.
Well, Ty, I'm going to give you a little bit of history about Brett Favre. I'm sure Chandler already knows about it. You probably know about it. But we all know where he started. He started right here where I'm driving through, right at this very moment. He started in Atlanta. He was an Atlanta Falcon. The guy struggled mightily in Atlanta. He struggled with the transition from being a college player to a professional. He did not seem to be able to handle it at first. He used to go out all the time, partied, and he never made it as a quarterback in Atlanta. So I guess we shipped him off to Green Bay, and he became a star out of nowhere. He was a very, very, very good player, very good quarterback. He did suffer some addictions, like painkillers. But I don't necessarily blame Brett Favre for doing that because, I mean, it shows that he had guts, he had bravery, and he was out there, he was playing no matter what, even though his head was knocked loose dozens of times. The guy was won them a Super Bowl and had an incredible career. He totally belongs in Lambeau and with the greats. As far as I'm concerned, you know, he was a great football player. Now, some of the stuff off the field, you know, that you just leave that alone, I guess, with certain guys, because that's how stars are treated. So I'll leave it at that Brett Favre was one hell of a football player.
And I literally think the situation that happened out in Atlanta, they really didn't give him a shot to do what he wanted to do. I don't know whether it was a situation. I think at that time, Glanville was still running the show down there. But I don't know if his gunslinger mentality.
You can say that Atlanta potentially, and it happens like this in basketball too. There's guys they don't draft, or there's guys that they don't pick up. Like in basketball, it was Chris Paul was a name that we passed on, and we got Marvin Williams instead. One of the worst baffles of all time history for the Atlanta Hawks. But the Falcons may have not given Favre his proper time, but I think they weren't comfortable with the way he was behaving off the field. I think there's stories reported of how he acted in Atlanta. So I think that's why the Falcons panicked on him. And it may have been Glanville, too. He didn't suit the offense, the run and shoot.
Okay, so Chandler, your thoughts on the career, your perspective toward Brett Favre, him hanging the number four up in Lambeau with the likes of Lombardi, Bart Starr. I mean, there's a couple of big-time notable names that are on that wall out there in Green Bay, and I'm actually nauseous talking about it, but seeing how the reception went, everybody was so receptive to Favre, and rightfully so, with him being there from the, you know, the very early parts of the 90s all the way to, I really want to say, 2007, 2008, to where he made the move to the Jets, and, you know, everything was up in the air about Brett Favre's career. But your thoughts on Brett Favre as what you've seen from him, you know, being a young guy out of southern Mississippi and, you know, carrying his talents at Atlanta, not really received by Glanville and those Falcons, and tearing things up while he was out there in Wisconsin.
Well, first, I didn't know his retirement ceremony was yesterday. So I'm surprised they had it during the offseason instead of during the season like most teams do. So that says a lot to me that they had it, man, on a Saturday in July. Really? Don't most teams normally do those types of things during the season? Surprising to me. That says a lot to me about the fact that they still don't really care for him. To me, at least. I just find it interesting. I mean, Brett Favre was a great player in Green Bay. The Atlanta thing, you know what? He didn't fit Jerry Glanville's system. This was a time when young quarterbacks didn't come in. You didn't get to come in and start. You had to wait your turn. He was a third-string quarterback. He was undisciplined. He threw a lot of interceptions, just as he did in Green Bay. And at the time, the Falcons were a decent team, so they couldn't afford to have a young quarterback coming in and mess it up. So they made the trade. Green Bay got him. They put him in a system that fit him. They got him with a coach that allowed him to do whatever it is he wanted to do. But the fact of the matter is that Brett Favre would not be a Hall of Famer had he not gone to Green Bay. He wouldn't. He would not ever have gotten a shot in Atlanta. He would not have gotten a shot in most places. And I don't think the off-the-field stuff came later. It was more so the fact that he was a young quarterback who was undisciplined, and he didn't fit what they were trying to do. So, I mean, he turned out to be a great quarterback. The nonsense he did toward the end of his career with the "I'm not retiring, I'm coming back," all of that, the thing with Aaron Rodgers where he really didn't want to let the young man, didn't want to even help the young man, I think speaks a lot to his character. I'm not trying to hear about how great and courageous he was when you're not willing to teach the guy that's behind you. You know, at some point, you know your job is going to come to an end, that your job is to help the team get better. They paid you a lot of money. I'm not really a Brett Favre guy. I think a lot of the stuff about him is a bunch of PR and media hype. Oh, he's so courageous. What was he exactly courageous about? What exactly made him so courageous? That's what I want to know, because other guys have addictions and they're just called bums. You know, they get called names because they're, he's the Panthers, so courageous, he still played. What exactly is courageous about that? I've never understood the hype about Brett Favre. I've never understood any of it. You know, he's a redneck from Mississippi, as far as I'm concerned, who happened to be a good football player.
Wow. Okay, now, before, you know, I kind of want to twist things a little bit with the Brett Favre situation because it has, you know, big stuff behind it. But let's just say, for instance, Chandler, there was something that you just hit on with Brett Favre about why they did this in the month of July. Now, I want your opinion or your thought on why they would do this in the middle of the summertime, where they probably can't get more people to come to Lambeau because it's warmer. But why wouldn't they do this in the middle of the season? Let's just say, for instance, to play a Division IV in the middle of Lambeau, get that crowd hype as possible, and have them go out there and roar all game long. Instead, they do it in the month of July. The ceremony ends, and, you know, everybody goes on about their merry way. Why not do it in the middle of the season? Is it more or less a situation between how him and Thompson used to go back and forth, or is this just a situation where there's more availability for Favre in the summertime, or just to get more people to fill up Lambeau Field at this given time?
Well, I mean, they would fill up Lambeau Field no matter what. So I don't understand why they did it now, unless it's just a way to get people to, okay, we gave you a day, now go away and be forgotten again. Because nobody talks about Brett Favre anymore, unless he puts himself in the news or what they look still good. But to me, it was a kiss-off. It really was. It was a kiss-off. It was, okay, we don't give you a day, but you're not going to really get a day. Like I said, I didn't even know it was yesterday. So how many people outside of Green Bay, honestly, that following, people that really don't follow the Packers, how many of them knew that his retirement ceremony was yesterday? I thought it was during the season. I really thought it was going to be during the season. That's why I paid it no attention. So, to me, it was a kiss off to Brett Favre. It was a payback for all of the years he gave them crap.
I think, and just to spin off of that, it might be Thompson. It might, knowing how him and Thompson went back and forth, Thompson tried to pay him to stay retired. That's interesting. Well, I know somebody that does know about this right now, calling it from the state of Arizona. We have Mr. Silva, a.k.a. Nacho. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning? I know that you're ready to speak on the Packers.
You know, good morning. Good morning. Yeah, I am ready. It's great. It's good. How are y'all doing? I heard Chandler quiet, and now he's talking. So how's everybody doing?
We're doing all right. How are you doing? And your thoughts on what you've heard thus far about a legendary quarterback for the Packers?
You know, not in total disagreement with Chandler, but not in total agreement. Now, as it pertains to the Packers and what he's done for this, for my team in particular, yes, he is. You know, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, in the Ring of Honor, and things like that of that nature. But as a quarterback in the NFL, like Chandler said, he really wasn't too much to behold. He was just pretty good at it. I mean, he threw a lot of interceptions all the time. You know, it took Reggie White coming over and solidifying that defense up for him to make two back-to-backs, and he lost one of them. And then it was, you know, playoff interception after playoff interception going home. You know, what are you really proud of? 297? That's all, you know, if you talk to any Packer fan and you have any critique for most Packer fans against Brett Favre, the thing that they're going to say back to you is 297 or 300-plus. 297 is a consecutive regular season streak, and 300-plus is including the playoffs. And if that's all you've got, I mean, and now you've got, you know, I mean, now with Peyton surpassing the playoff loss and surpassing the touchdown record, it's just, what else are you really clinging on to now, man? It's just your one Super Bowl in 20 years of football. I'm not a huge fan of Brett Favre. I love what he did for the franchise, and I love what he did for my team. But as a whole, looking back on the whole career, what did you really do? You didn't really do anything for the team. And then when we got a good player in to back you up for you to kind of teach, you wouldn't. He had to kind of learn on his own. Thankfully, through whatever, Aaron Rodgers was able to learn on his own and watch what was going on. But it kind of made me more upset as a fan to hear him say, you know, he's not there to mold or help a youngster out when that's what he is there for. That's what we pay him for as well. So that was very disheartening to hear as a fan. And then to know that he would go to a rival, he would leave, he would do anything to leave Green Bay after that point. It was just, you know, all that stuff. It just made no sense to me. So The reason why you do it on a Saturday in July is you don't get anything. You don't get any media time for them. You don't push them in the front. And albeit, God forbid, they do it in the middle of season, week eight, and we have a rocky start and we're under 500, and the media asked the dumbest question, but they would because they're the media. How would you do with this team right now? And he says some dumb shit like, oh, we would only have one loss. Or he says, you know, I would do better with this team. And now we get Brett Favre talk of, can he come back? Should he come back? And now we have this whole media hype around Brett Favre again. And it's just not worth it, especially for Green Bay, especially for us. We're past that already. We're past him and his games and him leaving and coming back and doing all the me stuff. And we just want to put it in the middle of Saturday, middle of July, get it over with, get it done with. We can get rolling and start the new season. We want to put this behind us and get it over with. Let the past be the past and celebrate what he did for the team and get it over with.
Now, before I throw this one around, Akizzy, because I know this is very interesting, you really think outside the 297 games or 300 games that he played consecutively, he's done nothing for the organization?
No, I don't mean like nothing for the organization, but, you know, we talk about the quarterback, and if you want to be known as one of the greatest quarterbacks in the NFL, you have to have done it in other ways other than just the regular season or you know, playing consecutively. What has he done? He's been to the playoffs multiple times, losing a lot. It took for him having a solid run game and Reggie White coming over in free agency to solidify the defense for him to just make a play, make a Super Bowl, which he won, making another one, which he lost. And then, you know, him going to the playoffs, and what are the last two or three memories of him are interceptions to lose games when we should have been in the Super Bowl and we should have won. But he is, you know, throwing interceptions to lose. So, you know, similar to, I guess you would say, a Peyton career, where if all you're doing is being good in the regular season and you can't produce in the playoffs, what are you really good for as an NFL quarterback to be called the elite or the best or one of the greatest? So, yeah, and for Green Bay, we went to the playoffs lots of times. We had good seasons. We never really had, you know, the number one pick, number two pick multiple years at all. We did really well, but we have one Super Bowl to show for it, and that's all I'm saying. You 16 years, 15 years, and one Super Bowl to show for it. That's it. If you're one of the greatest, you've got more than that.
Wait, you're poo-pooing at this like it's easy to get to the playoffs. You're poo-pooing at the fact that before the 2000s, he got the back-to-back Super Bowls, and in one of those Super Bowls, he played Elway. And Elway was on revenge mode, and not to just totally sell it for the Broncos, but Elway has lost a handful of Super Bowls before he actually went up in front of Favre and those Packers and won it, because Denver, basically, to me, that year was destined. Everything was clicking. Elway and the run game, the mile-high salute, everything that was going. And then you had the nerve to throw in a situation to the run game. So you're telling me the likes of Edgar Bennett, Dorsey Levens, Amon Green, I give Amon Green a good amount of credit. Amon ran the ball well. You're saying the run game was more effective than Favre passing the ball? I highly disagree.
Not when he's throwing interceptions as he was.
Listen. He made a household name out of Mark Shimura. Listen. Hold on. You spoke. Wait. You spoke. Wait. Listen. I'm talking now. You spoke. Let me speak. He made a household name out of Mark Shimura. Do you think if Mark Shimura, let's say, played for the Arizona Cardinals, people would know about Mark Shimura? Do you honestly think that would happen? Or Robert Brooks? Let's throw Robert Brooks out there. Do you think Robert Brooks would have an interesting career anywhere else in the NFL? Honest. Antonio Freeman left the Packers. Everybody forgot about him. Like he made names out of guys out of there. And, yeah, you're right. Reggie White coming from Philly, coming to Green Bay, interesting, one of the better defensive ends that I've seen in my lifetime. It brought presence to that defense, but he also had a ton of guys alongside him on that defensive front too. To, you know, not just the Celtics totally to Reggie White, but you making it look like the offense was mediocre with Favre there, and I'm up here battling for the Packers, and I can't stand these dudes. I can't stand these dudes. And yeah, you're right. Sterling Sharp was a big time name, one of the big receivers that he had. But Favre was getting him the ball. Like picture, you know, Magicowski, and you probably don't even know Magic Man, but Magicowski, they had to think of something to get Favre to do it. Favre was an MVP, you know, a threat to be an MVP consistently in the NFC. Like, yeah, you're right that he might be on the same path or started the same path that Peyton did. He was getting to the playoffs, but you're poo-pooing the situation that he got to the playoffs on a consistent basis regardless. Like, that's at least 8-8 or better that he has to fight with. And at this time, this was called the NFC Central, you know, with the likes of Green Bay, Detroit, Minnesota, and at this time, Tampa Bay, where Tampa Bay was one of the weaker teams in that division. But still, yeah, he had to get the job done, and this was consistent. This was consistent. I don't understand how you can throw shade at it, and you're a Packer fan. I don't know. Let me throw this around the kitchen, see how everybody else feels. Chandler, your thoughts on this situation, and I'll let Matt get at it. From what you hear from now to throw it out toward Favre, I mean, is it a situation that, it, you know, him not winning a ton of Super Bowls is, you know, a question mark around his legacy, shall I say?
It's not about not winning the Super Bowls. It's about how you lost the games. He was the reason they lost most of their playoff games. He wasn't the reason they won. He was the reason they lost. And yeah, Mark Chimura would have been a good tight end in anybody's system. But some guys are better in some systems than others. So let me get this straight. Brett Favre couldn't get off the bench in Atlanta under Jerry Glanville. Okay? Couldn't get off the bench. But he got to a system that maximized his talent, yet somehow he's the one responsible for all the winning, not the system. The same system with guys, like you said, Antonio Freeman, once they left, you didn't hear about him again. So is it the system or is it the quarterback or is it a combination of the two? It's a combination of the two, but it's also more the system. It's also more the system. Because how did things work when he went other places? Teams did okay until he threw a big interception and they lost. At the end of the day, he's exactly like Peyton Manning. He's got one Super Bowl win, and when he gets to the playoffs, he's the reason his teams lose. So if we're going to kill Peyton Manning for that, how are we not going to kill Brett Favre for that? I don't understand because the perfect analogy is Peyton Manning. They were in the playoffs every season, and every season they were the reason their team didn't go all the way. Now, does any one player get you a championship? Sometimes, every once in a blue moon, and Reggie White was that one guy. But if you really look at Favre's career, more often than not, he was the reason his team lost the big game, not the reason they won. What's the lasting memory of Brett Favre? Throwing an interception to end his team's season. That's the lasting memory of him. That was his last play. That epitomized his career. So if we're going to kill Peyton Manning for getting to the playoffs and being average, how is it we're going to elevate Brett Favre for doing the exact same thing?
So at best, you're saying that he's average or mediocre. You're also agreeing with the thing.
As a playoff quarterback, yes, he was. As a playoff quarterback, yes, he was. We said the same thing about Peyton Manning.
Overall career, because Peyton's career is not over. And obviously, I don't like Peyton either, but it's not like I can sit up here. If Peyton was to nail home the situation and say his career is over, you got to peg him as being one of the best quarterbacks we've seen in his history. He's one of them.
Regular season, yes. There's a distinction there, Ty. We're talking postseason and regular season. Regular season?
If we're talking about all time, Peyton Manning's not top five.
Hold on. Oh, my
God. All right, Matt. Let Chandler finish. Let Chandler finish, and I'll let you get at it, Matt.
I think he's finished.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Okay.
Brett Favre was the greatest quarterback ever when there was a certain temperature outside. And all y'all know that and cannot deny that fact. Here, if it's playoffs or what, he was the greatest cold-weather quarterback ever. Ever! I don't care about Bart Starr. I don't care about all those other great Packers. He was better than them when it was cold out. He was the man, Sterling Sharp, down the field deep to beat the Vikings in the playoffs. I mean, yeah, so what? He didn't win every Super Bowl. He won one, like the Atlanta Braves. They won one.
I look at it like this. If okay, the streak of him playing 297 games and including playoff games is over 300, so on and so forth. If that's his lone staple to fame of him, and you know, more or less, yeah, let's just say him in Green Bay, if that's the only thing that he brought to the organization, and this is something that you're overlooking, that him not only winning multiple MVPs, not only carrying his Green Bay team, who was actually in the whims before he got there, you know, in the late 80s, when, like I said, when Majakowski was there, they were dominating the NFC Central at that given time. Now it's changed to the North, but it was the NFC Central. They were in the thick of things with Detroit and you know, Chicago at that. So this was actually a situation where he turned that organization around. This wasn't a household Packer team unless it was people that lived in Wisconsin. I think Favre is basically the responsibility for a lot of people nationwide from the 90s until the thick of the 2000s, where a lot of people started to buy into that cheesehead situation. He got a lot of people to see what he was doing on that field and winning games, and not just being courageous in the fact that he's playing in cold weather and stuff. There was a lot of things that Favre was getting done, injured, playing the day after his father died. Everybody remember he threw for 500 yards the day after his father died on a Monday night game. I mean, there's a ton of stuff that Favre brought to the game that people were overlooking.
Hi, that was a great game. That was
I remember watching it vividly. I don't know too many people that can play right after losing the guy that taught him how to play the sport.
Does anybody remember when that guy for the Packers basically caught the ball off the ground in a playoff game and ran it in? I mean,
Antonio Freeman. Antonio Freeman.
He threw it off his leg. It landed off his leg. He picked it up, ran it in.
Well, that was more. I give more credit to Freeman right there making that catch than Favre. It wasn't like Favre made a crazy throw. That was Freeman. You know, circumstances that he was aware to catch that ball before it touched the ground, and the defender didn't know that, you know, he caught it and he got the score. But there's more in the tank for Brett Favre than what's being sold here. And a lot of the records that, you know, Peyton had to catch, a lot of quarterbacks that have been in the league didn't get to attain. I mean, Favre was threatening a lot of these NFL records. If you look at Favre's resume, it is very interesting. If you look at what Favre did in his NFL career, it is very interesting. Not to say that he's going to be a top five quarterback all time. I think that is strong to me. I don't think he's a top five quarterback, but I think he's at least mentionable in the top 20. Like I don't feel like I'm reaching, and that's a great number
to
be.
He had another level to him when he was, well, two things: when it was cold outside and he was jacked up on painkillers. That's end of discussion to me.
I have a question. Because you keep saying he turned Green Bay around. Did he make, was he in charge of drafting players, Ty? Was he in charge of signing free agents? Was he one who came up with the offensive system? Because so management turned Green Bay around. Okay. When, matter of fact, let me give you a perfect example. Okay. Phil Simms. Was he the reason the Giants won two Super Bowls, or was it Bill Parcells?
I think it was Parcells. The Parcells in that defense more than Simms. I'll be honest there.
When Bill Parcells went to New England and turned him from a laughing stock into a playoff contender every year, was it Drew Bledsoe, or was it Bill Parcells? Bill Belichick is the reason the New England Patriots win. Okay, he turned them around, not Tom Brady. Now, once he got Brady, they were able to go on a run, but everybody talks about Belichick. My point is this. How is it that Favre by himself turned Green Bay around when we all know that had management drafted him properly, signed bad free agents, guess what? they would have still sucked. But Brett Favre turned it around. I find that is where that, and I just don't see it. I really don't
okay.
see how
okay. Let's go. I'm gonna do it just like this. Let's go just like this. Drafted 91 out for the Falcons. Stayed there a year. He left 92 to 2007. He spent his time in Green Bay. Now, in this time, this is where the thick of things happened for him in his career, right? In the time from 92 to 2007, he won one Super Bowl. He won the NFC twice, back-to-back, 96, 97. He went to the Pro Bowl 11 times, right? The All-Pro situation, he first team three times, second team three times. He won the NFL MVP three consecutive years, 95, 96, 97. He basically was sitting on top of the NFL.
Strong hate on Brett Favre in this chat room. It's some strong hate on Brett Favre. That's all I can say. We should move on, Ty. These guys are haters.
Listen, the Packers all-time leader in passing yards, completions, passing touchdowns, pass attempts, and interceptions. NFC Player of the Year five times, NFL passing TD leader.
Period.
And chill out. The NFL passing TD leader 3 years in a row. In the time that he won the MVP and in 2003, he won it four times: 95, 96, 97, and in 2003. Just to say the least out of this. Now, you know, it is interesting about his interception total, where you know Peyton actually called him in touchdowns and interceptions. He threw 508 touchdowns, 336 interceptions. But I think that comes with the territory on the way that he played football, and not to say that that's exceptional or to be accepted, but I mean, me looking at it from my, you know, lenses, I had to deal with it with Barry Sanders. Even though Barry was one of the better running backs of what I've seen, Barry would sit up there and lose 3 yards here, lose 4 yards here, and then break one for seven or break one for 15. It's a give and take situation.
Style of running.
Right. Man, this is the style of passing of Brett Favre. He was a gunslinger. Everybody knew he was one of those guys that came out like a cowboy, all guns blazing, and they won games like this. This isn't a situation where this guy did not produce for this Green Bay team. I can't even believe that I'm battling for Green Bay. And then he went to the New York Jets and got the Jets there into the postseason run, if you will, in one season, in 2008, went there and made things happen with the Jets for one season. Like I don't know.
Yeah,
did
the Vikings make the playoffs with him?
No, but that he broke the record.
Okay.
He broke the record when he was with the Vikings in 2010 with Percy Harvin and Randy Moss.
I think we counterpointed these gentlemen nicely, so maybe we should just move on because they might have a rebuttal.
Actually, you didn't counterpoint anything. You brought up two things.
What did he just tell you? Everything he just told you, is that
Matt,
not good enough?
Matt, I don't interrupt you. Ty brought up two things that are perfect points in our favor. You brought up Barry Sanders. How'd those Detroit Lions do with Barry Sanders, Ty? How'd they do with that great all-time player?
Terrible.
And they never put anything else around him. Management didn't put anything else around him. How did they do? Not well.
Right.
Barry Sanders, far better player than Brett Favre could ever hope to be, but he couldn't put that team on his back and do it by himself. So management is to blame there for the team not being successful. As far as the Jets go, the Jets were basically a decent quarterback away from being a playoff team. Everyone knew that. So when Favre came in, so they got a good quarterback. See, nobody's saying Brett Favre was terrible. This is where you, Brett Favre, the people who want to deify this moron. This is where you missed the boat. This is where you missed the boat, okay? Brett Favre was successful because of the management there that put a championship-caliber team around him that took advantage of his abilities and were able to overcome his mistakes. When he got to the Jets, they couldn't overcome his mistakes. He cost us a season. Okay, because he knew his arm was hurt, but I'm not giving him my games played streak, right? And a perfect example, as I said, is Barry Sanders. So stop telling me how Brett Favre did all of this like he was the only guy on the field. He didn't win a doggone thing by himself. He didn't draft any players. He didn't sign free agents. The Green Bay Packers were successful as a franchise because they drafted properly, they signed good free agents, and yes, they had a great quarterback in Brett Favre, but don't come to me like Brett Favre's some all-time great, because he's not.
Is he in the top 20 before I let Matt respond to that?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not?
Okay. Oh, God.
Ah, wow. Okay. No. Okay. So Favre isn't in the top 20.
NFL's not that big of a quarterback fraternity. You're out of your mind. God.
Chandler, okay, where? Top 35 or 50?
No, he's just outside my top 20. He's just outside of it. He don't make my top 20.
Okay. So he's in the top 25, let's just say. He's in the top 25 all time.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Nacho, anything else that you'd like to elaborate toward this Brett Favre debate? Because this is a very interesting one, to say the least.
You know, I mean, there's nothing really else I could reiterate other than, you know, just the lasting memories in the playoffs, like Chandler and I alluded to. Yes, you make the playoffs every year. I think being a fan, when your predecessor comes in and 4 out of the 6 years he makes the playoffs, wins the Super Bowl, and subsequently is losing in the playoffs every other year, you continue to see the same thing. You're just, you know, you're not impressed by it anymore. So, you know, seeing it with Brett Favre, it's just, what are you really, you know, like I said, he's throwing way more interceptions, and he's the reason for the losing in the playoffs. In my opinion, in most of the playoff losses, it was him trying to be the gunslinger, trying to be the man to save the day, when if he would have just tried to do what was in the means of the team, we might have gotten further. We might have won more Super Bowls. He might be a Super Bowl champ, multiple Super Bowl champion, you know, even running into maybe an Elway. So I'm just not really, you know, ecstatic about him, you know, one of the all-time greats. But I'm just not I just can't do it. I mean, obviously for the Packers, you know, our Wikipedia page now has more playoff appearances, but only one more Super Bowl because of him, so to speak, quote unquote him. I'm just not too impressed.
Okay, let's just say for instance, right? Aaron Rodgers hangs on to this one Super Bowl win. Is he in the same discussion as Favre? I mean, let's be honest. He's getting to the postseason and blowing games too.
It's not close right now.
He actually has turnovers in playoff games at critical times. I mean, actually helped Arizona get to a Super Bowl. No, turned over the ball. Dansby with the fumble interception, however you want to call it, whether it a fumble or interception, game over. Arizona succeeds. I mean, should he have put up more points up against Seattle, especially while Seattle basically looked like they had their, you know, were basically being thumbed out of the game by Green Bay. Green Bay could have scored more points and definitely took care of them. If Aaron Rodgers in this discussion, if he still sits on one.
You talk about Aaron Rodgers' playoff appearances, albeit the Arizona game. Every time Aaron Rodgers steps off the field, his team has the lead. His defense subsequently gives it up and loses it, or something happens on an onside kick, and he has nothing else to do but sit there on the sideline and watch his team lose away a game that he's done everything he can against one of the best defenses in the NFL to get as many points as he can against it. You put up 19 points against the Seattle Seahawks, you better hope you can at least get something out of it, and you just give up too much. So Aaron Rodgers' career is going to be, you know, a little bit different, I think. I don't think this one is what he'll hold on to. So that's a little different aspect than Brett Favre. But Aaron Rodgers' career is different. His percentages is higher. Everything to do with Aaron Rodgers is just better. All the numbers are better. The interceptions are lower. He's not the reason for us losing playoff games. You want to take the face mask fumble against Arizona? Go ahead, take it. That's fine. He put up, what, 50-some points, 40-some points that game? I'll give you that one, his first time in the playoffs. But ever since then, he's walking off the field with the lead, and our defense is screwing it up. So I don't know if we can put it on Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers is injury prone.
Okay. I mean, we're still winning the division and making the playoffs with the injury-prone Aaron Rodgers. Okay, what's your next?
Wait, but you're saying he's better. He only started for 5 seasons.
It's just 6 seasons, but he still made the playoffs in all of them. And he's still
six of five. So, I mean, you're comparing his stats now at the first quarter of his career. Well, let's be honest.
No,
I mean, Aaron Rodgers.
I'm not comparing it. I'm saying.
Oh, you just said forward, you just said all of his stats are better. That's what you just said. Yes or no?
As of right now, yeah. Compared to all of his stats, as it compares to the completion percentage and everything else, compared to the first 5 or 6 years of Brett Favre's career, are better. So the trajectory of this career is going to be better than Brett Favre's. Even if you talk about the injury proneness, it's still better than where Brett Favre was in his first 5, 6 starting years. That's what I'm talking
okay.
about.
Okay. In Brett Favre's first 5 or 6 years of him starting, he made 2 Super Bowls, won one, just like Aaron Rodgers did.
Okay. And the other stats are better in Aaron Rodgers' favor when you're talking which is what I'm talking about. So Aaron Rodgers is still going to be able to do this, and the team around him is what's losing games, not him. That's what I'm talking about. So
look! He won three MVPs back to back with the likes of quarterbacks at the given time. With Troy Aikman was actually in the league. Steve Young it was in the league also. I mean, he had quarterbacks that he was going to war with also. It wasn't like it was Brady and Manning and we all can sit here. We bashing Manning too. So I mean, it's the same situation. But to be honest, while Brett Favre was injured, he was out there balling. It wasn't like a situation where Brett Favre is nursing a finger or something and not playing. These are situations that your boy Aaron Rodgers would sit out with. A finger.
Yes.
Stop it.
Hey, gentlemen.
Damn, man. You so mad at the guy you can't beat to make the playoffs? It's bad, Ty.
I'm mad at who? Rodgers?
Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, you mad at him, man. I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't know why.
How am I mad at what you compared him to Brett Favre in his early portion of the career when it's
in the early portion of the career, he's better than him, and just because he's got 1 Super Bowl and there's nothing in this division that's in his way from winning the division to keep making the playoffs, to keep giving us chances to win multiple Super Bowls. The problem with him is, like I keep saying, the problem with him is his team around him is not as good as it should be when he walks off the field. That's the defense to keep him up and keep him going in the playoffs. So hey, he can't do anything. You can't do anything when you're sitting on the field and you watch a defense give up a touchdown or give up a field goal or give up, you know, whatever. It's just ridiculous. Too much is going on. It's too much when you're sitting on the sideline and you have no control over it. It's a lot different when Brett Favre is on the field and he's throwing interceptions playoff game after playoff game when you need to go down the field and score to win the game, and he's throwing interceptions to lose you the game. That's a little bit different in my eye.
Okay, let's compare his pieces. I mean, we could go back and forth on this all day long. Do you think at the end of his career, Aaron Rodgers' career, that he crushes all of Brett Favre's records as a Green Bay quarterback?
As a Green Bay quarterback, yes, because I think Aaron Rodgers still has at least a good 7 years in him.
Okay, fair enough. Chandler, do you agree that everything that Brett Favre is sitting on right now, that Rodgers catches and takes care of his career records as a Green Bay quarterback?
Well, no, because he's not going to get the games played. He'll probably get close to the interceptions. I can't say that because, to me, yeah, in many ways they are the same guy. In many ways they are. I think if Aaron Rodgers' career ends exactly where Favre does, not with all of the drama and the moving around, but if he ends up with the 1 Super Bowl and them having gone to multiple playoff games and all of those things, yeah, to me, he winds up being the same guy as Brett Favre. He'll go down as a legendary Green Bay Packer quarterback, but to me, they'll be in the same boat in that they weren't able to make the plays to not have their team lose. And I'm sorry, when in that Seattle game, I don't want to hear about 19 points when you had that idiot Richard Sherman playing with one arm and you refused to throw to his side of the field still, and you knew he only had one arm. So, yeah, to me, that right there is what I'm always going to hold against Aaron Rodgers. That right there.
And he won't reply to that, though. But he reply to me, and I'm hating on Aaron Rodgers. Hey, I don't know. Matt, do you think he catches what Favre has done at the end of the day, passing yards, pass completions, passing touchdowns, and pass attempts at the end of his career?
Do I think Aaron Rodgers will?
Yeah.
I do. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be a great, but he has had some trouble with some big games that you pointed out, but also what Nacho said, his team has let him down a bunch. They let him down in the Seattle game. Defense just, after playing good for a couple series, just got rolled over.
But that offense could have scored more points, no?
Right.
Okay. Who's running the show? Who's running the show? I don't know. Aaron Rodgers, right?
Oh.
No?
Oh.
Hey, they be fuddled. What were you going to say?
I said, you talking about the guy who's running the show for the Packers?
Right. In that game, it was Aaron Rodgers. And kick a field goal. Do something. Get points on the board. If you're going to settle for 19, and just like Tim said, you're not going to Sherman's side because he picked you off. You're not going to go after this guy. I've never seen this. Never. He chose not to go to that side because you're scared to throw to the right side of the field. But you got Jay Nelson or Cobb that can beat this guy. They can beat him. Every player is not Sherman lockdown situation. He can be beaten. He can be beaten. I could care less on how good he does on the right side of the field. Cut it out. Do you think Favre would not go to the right side of the field if Deion was over there? Or Peyton Manning, you think Peyton Manning would go to that side of the field if Revis was over there? Like, come on, man. Come on, you got to be real with yourself. You got to be real with yourself. Especially, and I'm comparing Green Bay quarterbacks like this is my damn team, and I don't like them. Yeah, you're right. I don't like the Packers. You're right, Nacho. I don't. You're right. Good debate. Start this one up. Got everybody up. I told you I'd get Chandler up with the first topic I had. I didn't even get to nothing else. 917-889-9592. It was an interesting game going down there in Atlanta. John Lester looked like he got his luster back. Interesting enough, we have a Brave representative here. A 4-0 shutout, close to being a no-hitter. But Lester's numbers are actually looking not too great at this point right now. But knowing that the Cubs are still in the thick of things in the NL Central to try and get at, or not even NL Central, more or less to make a push toward the wild card, because I don't know if they got the ability to catch the Cardinals, but it would be interesting if they could make this run. Matt, your thoughts on the showdown that your boys had down there in Georgia, where you guys just got away from the no-hit situation late in that game, and how John Lester put it together up against the Atlanta Braves.
Why are you hating on my Braves, man, when they're down? How about those Twins?
We'll get to them. Don't worry. I got traffic now.
Lester pitches his heart out. And the Braves are falling apart. We're falling apart like we usually do. And like I told y'all a couple days ago, we're just waiting to go to the suburbs, unfortunately. I don't really like that move, but that's the direction of the team, and they're going to save their money. They're going to be a fire sale. You're going to see about 3 Braves gone by the trade deadline.
Chandler, your thoughts on John Lester pitching a gem yesterday up against the Braves, a two-hitter and a shutout in Atlanta up against the Braves, but his record, he's actually at 5-8 right now. As good as the Cubs have actually been playing this season, he hasn't been looking good record-wise, but he actually showed some good stuff last night.
Well, Atlanta already had their fire sale. There's no one else for them to trade. Atlanta's rebuilding. It is what it is. As far as the Cubs go, Lester pitched a good game. I caught the last few innings of it. No, the Cubs aren't catching anybody. Right now they're fighting for that second wild card, and I think that's about the best they can hope for. They're just not ready yet. They have too many young players who still haven't come of age, so to speak. The Addison Russells, the Starlin Castros, you know, they have too many young players that still are learning, Chris Bryant, so on and so forth. So, no, the Cubs aren't making a run at anybody, not in that division they're in, because they'd have to leapfrog the Cardinals, they'd have to leapfrog the Pirates, because I think the Pirates are going to have a better shot at the second wild card than the Cubs, to be quite honest with you. The Pirates pitching is better than the Cubs. Most people don't know that, but the Pirates pitching is better than the Cubs. If you look at the numbers, the reason that the Pirates haven't been winning really has more to do with hitting than it does with pitching. I think the Cubs are going to be in it till the end, but I can't see them getting into the playoffs this season, no.
Now, and right now, if it were a situation at the second wild card, they do have the edge at that position right now out of all of the teams in the NL. So they would actually be in a considerable spot behind the Pirates, which they're 4.5 back from the Pirates, which is reachable. I don't know if they can catch the Cards at 9. I think that's a bit of a stretch. But knowing that they could turn this around, and they do have interesting players within the lineup, but, you know, and especially the way that the youngster, Brian, has actually been more or less inspiring to the Chicago Cubs team. And for them to actually go on the road and actually have this performance out of Lester, I think this could actually help push the situation for the Cubs. But knowing what Lester was able to do, I did want to note that before we got away from it. Also, looking at the Cardinals, I don't know if y'all wanted to talk about that, how they beat up on the Mets. They won 12-2, and one of my friends that's out here put up a link, interesting, that John Smoltz was out there on record and said that the rotation that the Mets have is better than what the Braves had in the 90s. So, talking about Harvey and company, he said it was a better staff. However, Cologne, being Bartolo, got beat up yesterday up against the Cardinal team. So it was kind of like interesting that he make that statement and the Mets didn't really do too well. But the Cardinals are playing good baseball in their own right. We actually touched on this on Friday. I didn't know if you guys wanted to touch on that. Okay, who said yes?
I did, because we do need to talk about that, but John Smoltz is an idiot for saying
it.
Wow. But he's also
an idiot?
Right. He's an idiot for saying it, but he's also right.
Okay, how?
Well, first of all, you can't compare these pitchers, none of whom outside of Harvey have pitched more than one season, to that Braves staff. If you look at that Atlanta Braves staff, at the time he told what they were better, by the time when they got that staff together, Greg Maddux had already been pitching well in Chicago. Greg Maddux did start off his career as an Atlanta Brave. He started off as the Chicago Cubs. Okay, he was already a big name by the time he got to Atlanta. So that right, that in of itself makes the comparison stupid, because you were already bringing in an all-star pitcher, okay, to that staff. You had Smoltz, you had Glavin, you forget about Steve Avery. You had to throw Steve Avery in there as well. Smoltz, Glavin, Maddux, and Avery, that foursome right there was banging for a few years, and then they just did that. The Avery, you know, started having issues. They just kept plugging a fourth guy in. That's how good their Atlanta staff was and how good their development was. Stuff-wise, there is not one pitcher that the Braves had that could touch the stuff that these Mets pitchers have. Harvey, Syndergaard, Mats, they don't have a pitcher who can touch their stuff. Their stuff, they're physically more talented. They're not better. They're physically more talented. They're not better. It's a ridiculous statement to make. It is listen, when that pitching staff that the Braves had was rolling, if it was a four-game series, you went in hoping to get one of the four because you knew you were losing two. So the best you could hope for was a split, but in reality, you're probably only going to get one. That's how good that staff is. I dare anybody to tell me they think that the Mets in a four-game series, that the best the team can hope for is a split, because it's just not true. So talent-wise, yes, he's correct. But to say that staff is better overall, it's a ridiculous statement, and he should know better than that.
Matt, you are a Braves fan. Your thoughts on Smoltz, considering that the Mets staff that they have pitching now in the current day of 2015 has a better staff than what your Braves had throughout the 90s, which these guys actually had double-digit division titles at that given time.
Chai, you got to forgive me. What was the question?
The dominance of the Mets pitching staff comparable to the Atlanta Braves staff, yes. John Smoltz
You're talking about the Mets this year, right?
Yes.
Okay, because I was about to say...
I wasn't talking about the Mets in the mid-90s.
There was no comparison, you know, back then. I guess this year you can look at guys like Harvey, and I really don't know the names of these other guys that you think are great Mets this year. Who else is really doing really good on the Mets this year?
Well, there were a couple of the names that Chandler just introduced with Max and these guys throwing the ball pretty well in their staff. They got DeGrom that's actually been pitching well. Syndergaard has actually been doing well, but Bartolo got jumped on yesterday. Like I said, he gave up a good amount of runs yesterday, and Neese is actually
the
one that actually...
about the Mets. The Mets are headed to the sewer as usual. I know the Braves are too, but I can guarantee you the Mets aren't going to win anything.
As in this season or altogether, do you think that this is actually going to be the continual situation? Right now, they're only 3 games back from the Nationals. I mean,
they started out, they played pretty good ball, but yeah, the Nationals are pretty much a lock. And a very interesting pitching matchup, guys. I know some of y'all probably don't care about baseball, and I don't blame you because it's like almost watching paint dry at times. But check out the pitching matchup between Max Scherzer of the Nationals and Zach Greinke of the Dodgers today. Even if you're not a baseball fan, just keep an eye on that because it's going to be – those are two of the best pitchers in the game right now. I think Greinke's on – hold on, Little Harris. Greinke's on a scoreless streak, and Max Scherzer threw a no-hitter. So it's going to be a great matchup today.
Okay, fair enough. Taylor, do you think that the Mets can actually catch the Nationals? They're only 3 games back. I mean, this is a reachable situation. For the Mets, they can play consistent ball, but that's what they do need. They need runs scored. Your boy Granderson and company, these guys need to step up also. But do you think the Mets are more or less in a situation where they're basically going to be on the outside looking in, or they can actually get atop the NL East?
They can, but they won't. And I don't know, Granderson, really, that's the name you throw out there. Granderson's a bum.
No. I knew that the Granderson situation was spiked
up. I agree with that.
I know. I had to say it. I had to.
The New York Mets management and ownership does not care about improving that team because the fans still come and fill the stadium. New York Mets could make 2 trades. And the excuse that they use is, well, we don't want to give up any of our young pitching. Okay, fine. There's 2 trades they can make where they wouldn't have to give up. They'd have to give up maybe a C-level prospect at best that could improve that team. And the 2 trades are one to San Diego to get Justin Upton and 1 to the Reds to get a second baseman. You can get Brandon Phillips. You could get Todd Frazier who could play the infield. You could get Brandon Phillips out of Cincinnati right now for nothing. He's a better defensive player and he's still a better hitter than anybody you got at second base. You know, he's injured this year. I think he's batting about 270, which would still be an upgrade over anybody you've got playing second base. Okay. And there's the third baseman on the market they could get because David Wright is not ever going to be the same guy. With the back issue that he has. The management is going to, and all they have to do is say, we'll take all the money. It's the New York Mets. You can afford to take on salary. They're refusing to do that because the Wilpons are more interested than making the money back that they lost with Bernie Madoff than they are with the team. So can they catch the Nationals? They absolutely can. Will they? No. And it's not because the team will, it's not because they wouldn't have the talent. It's because they won't make the trades to bolster the team. But the Nationals, I got a feeling the Nationals might. The only reason the Nationals make the playoffs is because they're in the National League East. If any of the teams in the East, if the Mets or even Atlanta, believe it or not, were to make a trade to bolster what they have, I could see either one of those teams leapfrogging the Nationals. That's how inconsistent the Nationals have been.
And that is my concern on, you know, how up and down the Nationals have been. I mean, there's nights where they look like they have one of the more powerful offensive teams and the pitching staff has this stuff, and then they just lay flat. Nobody could actually get on the pass for these guys. So it's interesting for the Nationals to sit atop right now, knowing that Scherzer and company have actually been doing well, and Scherzer has been more or less into this Nationals team as much as possible. But I want to see the consistency be there for them. They are sitting atop the NL East, but I think they can be caught. And right behind them are that New York Metropolitan team, so it does make it interesting. But I do want to see if David Wright does come out of the DL, because he's actually on the DL right now. It could actually provide some type of spark. And this has actually been a situation that's been around, and whether he's not hitting well or he's injured, not playing consistent ball for this Mets team, it's something in itself. But knowing that they have an interesting series right now against the Cardinals, and knowing how they got jumped on, they're going to need to produce runs, especially in these games, to win them, to stay in this race in the NL East. Now, speaking of an Eastern team, I want to go to the AL East and see how you feel. Chandler, I will come to you to kind of put this dish in front of you. Your Yankees sit atop the AL East. However, it is a very interesting race between all of the teams in the division, including the Red Sox, who are playing not their best breed of baseball. 7.5 games separate all of the teams there. What do all of these teams need to do to survive, stay atop the division? I mean, knowing that the Yankees are sitting there, I know that you'll probably throw the Yankees there first, but the Rays are behind them, 3.5 games back. The Orioles are 4 back, and the Blue Jays are 4.5 back. All I think were within range to catch the Yankees, especially if they end up slipping some more. They actually let a game slip yesterday up against the Mariners as well. Your thoughts on this division, how it is very competitive at this given time, and the Yankees are still atop of this division, regardless.
Well, everyone likes to say that the AL East is mediocre, but if you look at the American League, if the Yankees win today, they will be one of 1, 2, 3, 4. They will be the 15th in the majors with 50 wins. Now, in the National League, there's only 3 teams with 50-plus wins. There's only 3, yet the AL East is considered mediocre. Okay. Boston needs to decide which direction they're going to go. You're either going to let some of these young guys play, get Hanley Ramirez out of left field. If you're going to play David Ortiz at first base and put him at first base, you can't have Hanley Ramirez in the field. He's a DH now. Let's be honest. Hanley Ramirez is a DH. So, but you already have David Ortiz. You got to make some decisions there in Boston. Someone has to go. Hanley Ramirez or the Panda have to go. And you need to let these young kids play. And getting rid of one of them, even getting rid of Panda, will bring them back pitching. Because really what Boston needs is pitching right now. And to solidify their batting order and get guys in there every day who deserve to be there. Toronto, it's been the same story with Toronto every single year. They got to stay healthy. They got to get pitching. Yeah, they can hit, but Bautista's due to get hurt again. Encarnacion's due to get hurt again, and they still have no pitching. And Reyes has already been hurt again. The Orioles is consistency. I think they are struggling with the success they had last year, and they thought it was going to be easy in American League East this year, and it's not. The loss of Nelson Cruz to that team is huge. It is huge because he lengthened that lineup and gave them a solid middle-of-the-order guy who was always going to be there. Nelson Cruz can hit. If he can't do nothing else, he can hit. For Tampa, young team, it's the pitching. If their pitching comes around, then they got a shot. As far as the Yankees need to decide what they're going to do at second base, and they need to stop depending on Carlos Beltran, who can't stay on the field. Carlos Beltran should not be playing the outfield on a regular basis. He should not be. The guy is old and brittle now. You need to get a second baseman. You need to get an outfielder who can stay healthy. And in my opinion, I think they should go ahead and make a trade for one of the big-ticket pitchers. And again, I'm going to keep saying this because this is baseball. There's no salary cap. I get there's a luxury tax. But if you don't want to give up your young prospects, then you take the entire salary. If you told Philly right now that you would take all of Cole Hamill's salary, or you told him we'll give you back a B-level prospects, but we'll take, you keep some of the money, but we'll take Ryan Howard's contract off your hands. You could get, any team could get Cole Hamill's right now. That is how you could get Cole Hamill's out of Philly without giving up any of your top-level prospects. But the American League East is a lot better than people think. And as usual, it's going to come down to pitching. Which team has the best pitching? And right now, believe it or not, people ask the Yankees.
So you think the Yankees have the better situation at the pitching staff?
Yeah, you got Nova back. You got Tanaka. The kid Eovaldi is growing and blossoming for our eyes. Michael Pineda's already turned the corner. I mean, listen, Robinson Cano has hit 2 home runs in the game off you know, some Hall of Famers. So there's no shame to say Robinson Cano got me. And the reason we lost yesterday was 2 swings of Robinson Cano's bat, and you still only lost by 1 run. Those type of games happen. Anybody who watches baseball knows that. It's 162 games. There's going to be some games like that. But if you look at the pitching staff, the weak link in the New York Yankees pitching staff is CC Sabathia. Think about that for a minute. And by the way, CC, as everybody's talking about, his this and that, his average fastball velocity is 91, 92. Not 95, but it's 91, 92, which is more than enough to get out major league hitters. His problem is location and confidence. That is his problem. His problem is confidence because he doesn't believe he can get guys out with the 91-mile-an-hour fastball. If he can turn the corner and start believing in his stuff, and I watched Andy Pettit go through this, all of those, and I'm not really an Andy Pettit guy, but Andy Pettit was a guy who threw 93, 94, 95 sometimes, and then he had to redesign himself as a pitcher and get along with 89-91. We won a lot of games for the Yankees at 89-91. This is what happens with left-handed pitchers who are hard throwers. They have to adjust to throwing not as hard. If he can make the adjustment and pitch inside more, because 91 miles an hour, there's a lot of pitchers in the major leagues right now winning games with 91. Matter of fact, Ty, you got one on your staff. Okay, there's guys who are winning with it, and you know, AJ Burnett. Look at Pittsburgh. AJ, there's guys winning with 91, but it's a matter of him believing in it and him locating his pitches. So yeah, I would say if you look at the American League East, the Yankees have the best pitching staff in the American League East. Now, talent wise, do they? No, that'd be Tampa Bay. But as a staff, yeah, and it's evidenced by the record because they're 49-41.
And I'm not even going to lie, I was one of the people that actually, you know, oversold the situation. I thought Tampa would actually struggle this season, losing a good amount of pieces to their team. And they're actually in second place in the AL East, sitting behind the Yankee team. So knowing how things are looking in the AL East, I definitely wanted to present this in the kitchen, see how you felt. Matt, your thoughts on the AL East, how interesting it is. 7.5 games separate from first place to last place. Last place being the Red Sox, and knowing that they could turn this around too, but I doubt it. I don't know if the strength is there, but just saying, the Red Sox are the team that's bringing up the caboose with the likes of the Rays in second, the Orioles in third, and the Blue Jays in fourth.
It's Baltimore O's. It's the O train. That's what it's about. That's what it's going to be about. It's all about the O train. I'm not worried about the Yankees.
So you think at third place that the Orioles catch the Yankees?
Absolutely. 100%.
Okay,
100% on that one, Ty. I'm all in on the O train. I'm all in on them. I'm backing them. A team is going to win the division. They might go to the World Series this year. You heard it first here, Jim.
Whoa. Baltimore to the World Series already.
I'm calling it. It's a long shot, but I'm calling it.
Okay, and this is where Chandler says, if Matt says something, go with the opposite. go with the opposite. Hey, nothing against Showalter. I respect Showalter, man, especially the work that he's done in his career, but I won't say that they won't make the playoffs. I say that they, like all these teams are in a reachable position to actually catch the Yankees if they do start slipping up. But just like Chandler said, the one pitcher that they are in question about is CeCe. He has an interesting matchup today. Him and King Felix go at it today in the Boogie Down Bronx. I want to see who actually pulls this one out. But I don't know if the Orioles get to the World Series. That's a push. That is a big time reach for that one. Another interesting situation I wanted to talk about was Ty Lawson, his situation and him rehabbing, or throw that away because he has his issues and they said that they're going to send him to rehab. But also Tiger Woods missing back-to-back cuts also. There are more people coming out saying that Tiger should actually hang it up. I don't know, but looking at the way that he's not been able to get into the field and you know, make the cut, it is starting to make you wonder what's left in the tank for Tiger Woods, even though golf is a sport that these guys get to play up until their 50s, 60s, 70s. I mean, you still got the likes of, you know, the Masters situation where you got Jack Nicklaus and those guys still on the courses and playing. Why are everybody pushing at a guy like Tiger Woods to quit, even though he's not making cuts? And this isn't the Tiger that we're used to from, let's just say, 4 or 5 years ago. But right now, there's more and more links, media, pushing attention toward Tiger to hang this thing up. Chill, I'll come to you first.
Well, it's the hatred. It is still the jealousy and the envy. Because last I checked, was anybody telling Tom Watson to quit when he stopped making cuts and Greg Norman? This has happened to every big-name golfer you can think of. Jack Nicklaus stopped making cuts for a while. He was missing cuts. He was playing badly. Arnold Palmer, you know, Lee Trevino. We can go down the list. All these guys, oh, it's over for him. People said that about them, too, at about this age. At about this age. Is he the same player he was? Of course not. He's in his 30s, late 30s at that. So, okay, he's not the same guy. He has to learn to adjust to his game. It will take time. The beauty of it is, if you look at Tiger's game and you take away all of what you expect to see, look at what his game is, he's not far off. If you look at his game for where it is right now, if his name wasn't Tiger Woods, would people say, oh, he needs to hang it? Would they say, oh, he's struggling a little bit, he can turn it around? Because the talent is there. He's just not putting it together. His name wasn't Tiger Woods. That's exactly what would be said. But he has set such a high bar for himself that now it's, oh, he's done. So now he's, instead of being the above average golfer, now he's just an above average golfer, which means you'll make some cuts, you'll miss some cuts. That's still pretty good considering what he was. Is it as good as is it what we expect from him? No. Is it good enough to win some more majors? Actually, yeah, it is. It is. Look at the guy who was the leader day one. Had anybody ever heard of him, the Japanese? Had anybody ever heard of him? Anybody? You know, John Vandevelde. Remember that name? Yeah, he screwed himself out of winning a major, but who had heard of him? So golf is about whether or not you're good that day. Right now, Tiger's game is off track. But does he need to hang it up? No. So all of that, that's just the nonsense of people who still refuse to accept the fact that without Tiger Woods, no one will give a damn about golf.
And then no credit to what type of tear Jordan Spieth is on right now.
Jordan Spieth at this point is a young player who has a lot of talent. He's doing what he's supposed to do. He's winning tournaments because he's at the top of his game. See, what he does has nothing to do with Tiger. Except for the fact that the only reason people even know his name or McIlroy's name, why, is because they're still comparing them to who? Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. They're comparing them to Tiger Woods. Oh, he did this at this age, and Tiger did this. If you every time you hear his name or McIlroy's name, in that same sentence, Tiger Woods' name will be brought up. So they're still benefiting from Tiger Woods, even just with the comparisons. When Tiger Woods came on into golf, they were comparing him to Nicklaus and Palmer, who had been retired for, what, 15 years? Who hadn't even been playing. Tiger's still playing, so they benefit. They're benefiting more from Tiger actually struggling than they are if he was still dominating golf. Think about that for a minute. By him struggling, that's the benefit these young players get, because now you can hold them up against Tiger. So you see how good they are? They're better than Tiger. So, listen, they better hope that Tiger doesn't go anywhere for a long time.
Matt, any thoughts toward Tiger missing back-to-back cuts and a lot of the media throwing that he needs to either retire or give himself a break so he can get his game back together?
Well, you can call me a hater, but I'm enjoying his misery right now.
And why are you enjoying the misery?
I don't like his attitude. I never have. You know, he thinks for himself with the way he acts out there. He acts like a jackass. Sorry to curse.
Okay, fair enough. I think this might be the dislike. Since hate is such a strong word, I mean, Chandler threw that out there. But I think this is the dislike that's being pushed across the media and you know, people alike that are into the sport about Tiger. I don't know if it's a situation where he needs to retire. I think it is a situation where he might need to, you know, find his game, whatever it takes. I think he's rushing himself to get back out there, and he's happy. He's struggling all across the board. So I think it's more or less he needs to find himself and come out there at his strongest point. But I think it does take away from the game of golf if he's not on the course, because people aren't as interested if Tiger isn't there. And once he misses the cut, I wonder how many people do stick around at some of these courses and wait to see who ends up winning the tournament at the end of the day. The one topic I want to touch on, Nacho, I do want to throw this to you, that we actually had this in the food fight yesterday, right, people? And interesting enough, I said to Mr. Silva, I said, what if Chavez wins, right? And this being Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., if he would have won the fight up against Reyes. Well, it did happen. He did win the fight. However, if people did watch the fight, not impressive at all. He did not have an impressive fight, but his punches, the stuff that he landed with, it more or less, I guess, appeased the judges, if you will. He got out. Reyes threw more punches in this fight. However, the more effective punches were coming from Chavez Jr. Is this a situation that actually helps him restart this career that he's been waiting for a win to try and build off of? Or is there still question or doubt in Chavez's career? Now, mind you, this was a fight that, looking at the way that he was effective in getting some of them shots in on Reyes, I don't know if you get the big-time notables within his division for him to get some of those situational punches and having him up against the ropes and in the corner and stuff. But this is something I said. If Chavez wins, then what? And you were so up on Chavez losing. Well, now Chavez is successful. Where did he go from here?
That was absolutely ugly. I don't understand what was going on. The only factor was Marco was unable to land more punches. But it was the same performance we saw against Funfara. Reyes was just a smaller guy, unable to land big, harder punches to make Chavez quit again. I think this is the stepping stone other boxers are going to need now that Chavez has won. He's back on the quote-unquote winning track. There's going to be big boxers who need to fight ex-champions, who need to fight a big name in boxing, that are going to be licking their chops and ready to fight this overweight guy who thinks he can bully people at 160, at 170. It's really hard. He talked about just the fact that the weight started at 168. They had to bump it up. He still couldn't make that. He talked about 160 was so hard to make and how he could take those punches, comparatively speaking, to the Funfara fight. And it's just like he is not – there's no – I didn't see anything different from the Funfara fight in this fight other than the fact that his opponent was a smaller fighter. He was sluggish. He was unwilling to attack. He was able to he was able to, because of Reyes's smaller stature, he was able to relax when he was allowed, when he wanted to, and it just, it made for a really, really boring fight from him, and I was unexcited from his performance. The shots were big, I guess. They sounded loud. The crowds, oohs and ahs when they landed were loud, but the punches themselves were I would have to say, mediocre comparative to speaking to what Chavez could have been landing if he was in shape and peak physical fighting shape. Because they were hitting, you can count countless times Reyes was hit squarely in the jaw, on both sides of the jaw, on both chins, and in both eyes, multiple times, countless times. He smiled and kept coming. Now, this is a guy who was grossly outweighed by Chavez, and you could see it in the ring in their statures. And those punches were landing squarely and not effective at all. So I think anyone in this weight class is licking their chops and ready to take whatever Chavez can throw at them and knock him out. So this win is a false win at that. It was a tune-up fight. They definitely made Reyes try to jump up as much as he could and to slow him down. And he was not able to get big enough to get power behind those punches. Because if I think he would have been able to get power behind those punches, he did land more than Chavez did. If his were more powerful, I think we might have seen a different outcome. But like I said, I think the judges were swayed by the sounds of the crowd and maybe the smacking of the skin. But I don't think there was much power behind those punches, as people think. The way Reyes was able to take off pretty much every single one of them and keep walking forward and keep doing what he was trying to do.
Now, there was an interview after the fight, outside of the media situations that normally are seen. They have the likes of Chavez Jr. speaking on the winner of Canelo and Cotto, and he actually states that he thinks Cotto should win that fight, but he wants to fight either the winner of that fight or Triple G. Now, your thoughts on that one? On all three of those boxers potentially up against Chavez Jr.
All three of them will decimate him. They will be quick fights. They will be quick knockouts. This guy is not ready on any of those levels. To have to fight Cotto, he would have to drop to at least to 160, maybe 157. They would drain him as much as they could to fight Cotto. And to step in the ring against Canelo and Triple G would be his own death record. He would get knocked out quite fast against either of those two opponents. They're at the top of their, like I said, physical peak, and they're working their butt, they're working their behinds off to get into the ring and beat the top players, the top fighters, and to step into the ring against any three of those guys would be ill-advised in my eyes. But like I said, this is a false win. But it's a win nonetheless. It'll get him back in the conversation. Being an old champion and having Robert Garcia in his corner training him, he might be able to get a big fight like one of those three, and they will be able to get a win against a multiple middleweight champion, Chavez Jr., because he's not ready or on their level anymore.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. But Nacho, do you think a fight like that may be what Chavez needs for his career, in the sense that he would get taken apart? But do you think he needs to get a beating like that in order to show him just how, I guess, overinflated his own sense of self is? Could a fight like that for him, I mean, for his career as a boxer, sometimes getting your behind handed to you is a good thing. Do you think that something like that might actually kind of get his head on straight?
You know, the Fanfara fight 3 months ago was supposed to be that one that got his head on straight. He quit on his stool in that fight. Fanfara was the bigger fighter, and the same exact Chavez last night was the same win we saw 3 months ago. So this was supposed to be what we heard from the new trainer, the four trainer and five fights. the new trainer, Robert Garcia, that training camp, that this was a new Chavez Jr., this was a dedicated Chavez Jr., this was someone who's ready to come in and do what Chavez Jr. was doing, laying people out and back to what Chavez Jr. could do, which was box and win boxing matches, win fights, and knock him out. We were told this was a different Chavez. Weigh-ins come, and he's still missing weight. The fight comes, and he's still fighting the same way he fought against Fonfara. But like multiple commentators and everyone on social media and everyone pretty much watching the fight, if Reyes was a bigger fighter, if Reyes would have came in, bigger, just as big as Chavez, maybe as big as Fonfara, this would have been the same outcome of him quitting on his stool because he was not prepared for a fight for someone of this weight caliber. Reyes's size really was the determining factor in this fight. But like I said, this was supposed to be the new Chavez Jr. in this fight. So feeding him to a Triple G or a Canelo, like we discussed on Saturday, if he won this fight and Canelo was able to pull out the victory against Cotto later in November, we could possibly see a Mexican May 5th of May fight if Mayweather decides to actually retire or not come back. We could possibly see Mexico versus Mexico on Cinco de Mayo weekend with Canelo versus Chavez Jr. The undercards would have to be tremendous fights, because that main card would end in 2 to 3 rounds with Canelo knocking out Chavez Jr. But that's the fight that I could see potentially being made if Canelo wins, because Chavez would have a fight, a victory now on his card, and he's back to his quote-unquote winning ways with the new trainer. And, you know, everything is what their training camp said. To the naked eye, if you just read what they wrote, read what they said, and read the scorecards, you would think Chavez is back to what Chavez can do, but he's definitely not if you watch what he threw out there.
I just want you to know I didn't bring up Mayweather, okay? I just want you to know that I didn't do it, okay? I didn't even say the name, okay? So I'm not getting in trouble.
It was a thing yesterday about Imam earlier in the Showtime bouts with Imam and with the good knockout he had. I would definitely like to see him fight a Terrence Crawford at 140 to see what those two guys can get. The jab was working for him again excellently. So I'm a big fan of Imam. Don King needs to shut his mouth and stop talking, but Imam needs to go in there and prove what he can do at 140. And I think him and Terrence Crawford could be a good fight, even though he called out Adrian Broner, things like that. So I'm excited to see what Imam can do. But like I said, Don King needs to shut his mouth and just stop talking. But we all know that's not going to happen.
I don't know why he's aiming for Adrian Broner. Nobody wants to see this guy fight no more, especially after that last fight. Go ahead, Chandler. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Doesn't Imam have a guaranteed fight right now between the Postal and Matisse? He's got the winner of that fight.
He gets the winner of that fight. He thinks he's gonna win whoever comes out of that fight. But I don't know what's, you know, because Matisse in that fight's going to be good, but I really think Matisse comes out the winner. And with Matisse that's going to be a slobber knocker of a fight. But I think the jab, the length of Imam could be the deciding factor, but we'll have to see. But even with a loss to a champion, would-be champion in Matisse, I would still like to see Crawford fight Imam. That's just a fight I really would like to see. I think them two go at it would be something exciting for boxing fans at 140, with now Danny Garcia gone.
And that's good, because Imam is undefeated, and he's a knockout artist in itself. But Matisse is a knockout artist, but I don't know if Matisse can really deal with Lynch that has power too. So that'll definitely be a very interesting fight to see if that does go down. But like I said, the Brona situation, that there's no money behind that. Like to me, I don't know what public or fandom is following Adrian, especially to appease him. I think that he basically wants to shut Adrian up, if I could think of anything to draw behind that situation. There was one thing that you actually posted about Frampton. I wasn't big on that fight yesterday. Frampton did not look impressive. He got dropped twice and still won the fight. Like, and he's trying to make his name big in America over a guy that everybody was noting that he should have won the fight. He did, but he needed to go to the decision, and he looked battered and bruised in that fight. And you were actually identifying with it, but I wasn't too impressed about Frampton. Your thoughts on that one?
You know, with the Frampton-Gonzalez fight, Gonzalez had the length, and he just couldn't get able to get another knockdown. Frampton was able to withstand two knockdowns in the first round, like you said, and subsequently outbox him for the next rounds. To me, the jab of Frampton is what won him the fight. He was able to land that more. And Gonzalez was just trying to go for the knockout from the first round on. I think if Gonzalez was able to consistently line the jab and get around Frampton, it would have been a better fight for him. But I forget his name. What is it? Scott Riggs. I think from his home country or native country, won also yesterday. So he's got to go back there and probably fight him before he comes back to America. I was not impressed as well by Frampton's output, especially him coming out and saying he needs to put on a big show. They continually kept telling him that in every interview and every post-interview, because his comments were, you know, profoundly, in America is where he wants to fight, and his debut, he needs to make a splash and make fireworks, which meant a knockout, which meant he had to come out and do everything he can to get that knockout. Unfortunately, when he tried, he got knocked down twice. Then he went back to boxing. And actually won the fight, but it was just really bad for him. So they continually ask him, and like you said, at the very end of the post fight last night, I think it was right before the Chavez fight, they interviewed him again. His face, after being showered, you could see the clear bruising. He was tagged a few times, and I believe someone with a little more power, someone with a little more accuracy might be able to sleep him, maybe put him down, especially since we've seen he get wobbled and fell back a couple times in that first round. So it will be interesting to see who he fights and continues to go after. But like I said, I was not impressed like you. I wasn't really impressed with what Frampton put out there, especially in the U.S. debut with all the big talk.
Right. For him to get considered, he's going to have to come off with an impressive fight. Better than that, especially one that they quoted that he should have been able to take care of business, and he got all that he could handle in that fight yesterday, just to say the least. And he had to get up off the canvas two times to actually mount a comeback and win. I think that actually amounts to the position of his heart, how much he has to go after a guy. But still, yet I still think he has work to do. To me, he's not a Lomachenko yet. Like he has to, if he's one of those guys or a Triple G that's trying to, you know, break the international barrier and come over here and be a name over here, he has to do more work in the ring. That's just me. That's just me. All right, well, we are at the tail end of the show. I need plugs and closeouts from all of you before we shut it down here at the brunch. I'll start with you first, Matt. Give me a plug, closeout, anything that you'd like to promote as we shut down the brunch.
I just want to promote the Auburn Tigers at wardameagle.com. And it's going to be a great season. We got a great quarterback coming in. You guys enjoy the rest of your Sunday. It was good to hear everybody talk today.
The Auburn Tigers? Oh, man. Don't talk about them, man. You guys have to survive the SEC. They said the SEC doesn't have their power like they used to. So we're looking at a watered-down SEC from what they're saying. We'll see. Okay. Mr. Silva, I need a plug, close out anything that you'd like to promote as we shut down the brunch.
You know, we got a good food fight yesterday. We should have an even better one coming up this next week. We've got, you know, August 1st coming up with the Danny Garcia fight, so we got some good fights coming up, as well as we all know what happens in September. November, we have the Canelo Cotto fight, and then who knows what happens in December. Triple G may be fighting in Vegas against someone. Who knows what could be going on, what could be happening. December is always a good month, especially for boxing. So we might have to check out, you know, what's going on in the ways of big names in big boxing in the month to come. Again, at Nacho in the Box, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Great show. Thank you, guys. You guys are the best. Chandler, Matt, Ty, awesome. Hashtag back-to-back MVPs. Let's do this. Can't wait for this football season to start, less than a month away from preseason. And let's go.
And Sports City, just so you know, I didn't bring up Floyd's name at all. I didn't bring up Floyd Mayweather at all. So I want peace. You know what I'm saying? That's all I'm asking for. And look, he's pushing and hoping for Aaron Rodgers to get back-to-back MVPs. You know who got back-to-back-to-back MVPs in Green Bay? Number four. Didn't happen for Rodgers. I'm sorry. So he has work to do. Chandler, I need a plug, close out, anything that you'd like to promote as we shut it down here at the brunch.
Well, you know what? Shane Mosley, what the hell are you doing? Why are you fighting?
I know.
They ought to be ashamed of themselves even putting these guys in the ring. I'm sorry. They ought to be ashamed of themselves. Come on, man. Just get behind down, Shane, and manage your son's career. And I honestly think that's why he's doing it, because his son is going to fight on the undercard. Why you want to let your son see you get beat down before he goes out there to fight? I'm just saying. Other than that,
He won't lose that fight. He won't lose that fight, Chandler. He already beat up Mayorga. That fight makes no sense at all.
And not to me it doesn't, but hey, what do I know? But other than that, man, it's a lot of fun. You know, thanks guys for coming. But and just to I'm gonna close out with this. Some guy named Willett is the leader right now at the British Open. So you know, on any given day, somebody can have a really good golf game. For those of you people who still on Tiger, Danny Willett is leading the British Open, okay, over Jordan Spieth. So how great can Spieth be when some guy named Danny Willett has taken a lead at the Open?
And I don't know, because the way Jordan's been playing, I think Jordan will get back into things and catch him, man. He's actually turning into a phenom like Rory has. And, of course, you know, years past and what Tiger was. So if Jordan actually ends up catching him, you know, the aura starts to build around him to be the next one to be, you know, reigns to the situation until Rory gets healthy and hopefully Tiger can get back to his old self again. But right now, you know, it's early. It's early. It's not over yet. It's still the third round. This is Sunday where things could close out. Weather has been an issue out there, too. So we'll see how that does close out there. Chandler brought up an interesting topic. I didn't think of bringing that topic up, not thinking that it had any weight or anything, but the Mayorga-Mosley fight, one is 45 and the other is 41. What are they fighting for? Like what? A check? Yeah, of course. They trying to get money, but like, what does this do for their boxing career? Either one of them. You guys had to drag Mayorga out of bed to fight. He was in bed sleeping. Literally. I don't know. Boxing is great. It's great, but I don't know what that matchup does. I don't know. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blog. The Chefs will be back here tomorrow, Monday night, sport wrapping things up, man. Hopefully everybody has a good weekend into it. It bothers me every time Sunday comes around, because you got to get ready for the Monday morning and that push that you got to get out there. Matt wanted to talk about my twins. They came up short, but Chandler hit on something, especially when a team comes up with a late run late. These things happen. And by the way, Glenn Perkins, his first blown save out of this whole season. He was 28 for 28. That's some good stuff. He went to the All-Star game, I hope you know. He did. But things happen. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm pissed off on these guys coming up short. They came up short. They should have won the game. But he said that they have no shot up against Oakland. Twin Cities, get it done out there in the Bay. On that note, tell a friend that it's the Chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Thomas is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you, people.
Good morning. It's a Sports City Chef with Sunday the Brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy everybody. Don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark the Moses and TP Timeless.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, in 2 hours of facts. That's a fact, yeah.